Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. We are always excited when our guests get a promotion or take on a new opportunity. And in this case, our guest took on a new opportunity before we had the chance to air this episode. So I was able to sit down with Kurt Fitzpatrick, who at the time was the head coach at SUNY Mooresville, and now has taken on the head coaching job at SUNY Cortland. So here we go, our episode with Coach Kurt Fitzpatrick, new head coach at SUNY Cortland. Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We are recording this live at the New York State High School Coaches Association Clinic, and joining me on the podcast is the head football coach at SUNY Mooresville, Kurt Fitzpatrick. Kurt, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Keith. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is always neat for me to be able to do some things like this because I usually have to sit on the other end of the phone. But, you know, it's good to sit down and talk face-to-face with somebody.
Yeah. Thanks for coming out to New York. Yeah,
absolutely.
It.
No, it's been great. I was telling Andy Kotelnicki that, you know, you come out to this and you just see guys out here to learn and to work to get better. And you really don't know if you're in Ohio or New York or Florida. I mean, those things all look the same. And so a lot of guys out here trying to get better this weekend.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great clinic.
Well, Coach, you have an interesting coaching journey here. You were a guy who was able to get a head coaching job at 31 years old. You're 38 years old now, still a pup in my eyes. But talk to us first about just making that progression, you know, your coaching journey from that player to getting into coaching and then becoming a head coach.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting, but it seems like it happened fast. You know, when I graduated college, my priorities were a little bit out of whack, and thought I wanted to work on Wall Street and do all that stuff. I was a business major, and I did that for a year and just hated everything about it. I was always a football junkie in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, the kid with notebooks and drawing up plays and all that stuff. And after a year, decided I didn't want to wear a shirt and tie every day to work. So I ditched the shirt and tie and was able to go back to my alma mater at St. John Fisher out in Rochester, New York, and was the quarterback coach at my alma mater for 2 years, and had a great quarterback to coach, who's now the offensive coordinator there at Fisher, and then got an opportunity to be an offensive coordinator after 2 years at Utica College with Coach Fagiano, and then five years as an OC. The head job opened up at SUNY Mooresville, and I wasn't sure if I was ready to be a head coach, but I'm not one to shy away from a challenge usually, and went through the process and I was fortunate to get hired, and I can't say that I was ready to be a head coach, but he just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and here we are seven years later. So
yeah, it's I became a head coach at the high school level at 32, and I love using the analogy drinking out of a fire hose.
No doubt.
Because, you know, to that point, I mean, you might have thought about being a head coach and what would you do in your program and how you would run a program, and you know, you take notes and learn from everybody, and then you got to go out and do it, and then something happens that you didn't think about. I mean, there's all kinds
of
problems.
As an assistant, we always have opinions. Yeah. As an assistant, of I would do it this way, I would do it that way, and then when the spotlight's on you and it really matters what you think, it's a little bit different being on that side of
it.
It's been great, though.
Different sitting in that seat. Well, and it is about learning this game. I mean, whether you become a head coach at 31 or 50, you know, you need to keep learning, right? You need to keep preparing. So you get the opportunity at 31. It's 7 years later now. Talk to us about the learning that's occurred, and some of that really is on-the-job training.
Yeah, it really is. I think some of the biggest things that I've learned is being a head coach, and I'm also the offensive coordinator. I still coach the quarterback. So there's the X and O side that I get to. I haven't gotten totally away from that, which is great. But as a head coach, when I wear my head coach hat, the biggest thing I think I've learned is that you can run. You can have the best play call in the world. You can have the be on the cutting edge schematically, but it's about the players and how well you've developed them through your program, how connected they are to one another and to your coaches and to your school or university, and how bought in they are. And I tell our guys a lot, especially to our offensive guys in a meeting, it's not the play that we call, it's how you play that makes the difference. And so as I've learned on the job, I've learned to spend more time focusing on developing the players, and the X's and O's, obviously that's the
yeah,
fun part,
right,
and all that stuff, and the kids, the players love that too, but getting them to buy into one another and play the right way and make it about people and relationships, and the X's and O's kind of just fall into place from
yeah,
there.
Yeah, when you look at yourself now, again, you know, 7 years now as the head coach, and think back to your early days, and you know, culture is the buzzword today, and you call it what you want, team building, you know, leadership, all those things. I guess, how have you evolved in those terms? What's your culture like now? And I guess maybe some things that were different when you first installed it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is more going to more of a empowering the players, more so than me. I used to have, you know, a leadership council meeting, and I would have a group of guys that were voted on, and I would, you know, have my PowerPoint of all the leadership stuff that everyone has and all that stuff, and all that stuff is great, and I used to, you know, tell them how I wanted them to lead, and now I think what I've kind of morphed into is more empowering the players to take ownership over the program, and that it's not my program, it's your program. And empowering them, and as they grow through the program, you know, influencing those that are younger than them, really involve our players in the recruiting process. We, you know, when we have recruiting visits a couple of days from now, you know, we're not a signing day doesn't mean anything for a Division III school, as you know, as much. So, you know, we've got a bunch of recruits visiting on Saturday, and really the biggest thing about that visit is it's about our players. Our players are the centerpiece of our visit. You know, I don't want our recruits just to take my word for it. You know, I want them to hear it from our players and be around our players and see the relationships that our players have with one another. And in doing that, our current players are building leadership, because you know they're recruiting these new young men, their future teammates, into our program, and so that when those kids get in our program, now their big brothers, so to speak, have a real stake in the game. So it's a real, you know, it's a people process.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you want your kids, really, whatever level you're at, you want them to be your best recruiters. And you know, when we would run our visits at BW, it was the same way. Like, a lot of that, you know, you have kids in class during the day and whatnot, but, you know, weekday visits, we do some weekends. But, you know, what we made sure of is at lunch every day that a bunch of our players came over.
No doubt.
And that as coaches, we didn't sit at those tables anymore. And we told them, like, you fire away at these guys. You ask them what this program's like. You know, whatever you want to know, they'll tell you, and we're comfortable with you guys asking them those questions.
Yep.
And And they were our biggest recruiters. They were, you know, empowered in a lot of ways because, you know, we trusted them with the program. Mm-hmm. I mean, recruiting even at the D3 level, I mean, it's a big deal.
No,
you know,
no.
A lot of schools count on you to help with, you know, making a class and so you have to have some trust there. But you build that with your players over time. It's not just here's the keys to the car.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's I don't think I could have done that when I first became the head coach at Morrisville. You know, I didn't. Whenever you go to a new school, you don't really know the place either. So, I think it has been a growth. And I think as I got more comfortable as a head coach, and you know, realized that, you know, as the head coach, it's not about me; it's about them, and just set expectations. These guys trust you as their coach, and just kind of let it play out, and then eventually you'll start to hear them. When you start to hear your players say some of the, you know, every coach has their taglines or their, you know,
right.
Some things that I say that you say a lot that you don't even realize. And when you start to hear your players say it to a recruit or to a younger, a younger player on our team who maybe made a wrong decision, or and you hear them start to push the messaging that, you know, some of the things that we believe in, that's I think when you know you've got a, you know, you've got a culture that's either built or being built. It's kind of always under construction. But
well, you know, a couple things that come to mind. I always like to on long drives listen to podcasts and learn on the way. So I was going back through one I listened to before with Urban Meyer and Tim Kite, and you know, Urban was talking about sound bites, right? And that you know, I'm sure you've done it before. I know I have. You know, you go out and you write your mission statement. What is our program's going to be about? And no one can recite it for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even you sometimes.
No doubt.
And he talks about exactly what you said. Those sound bites, those buzzwords that those guys hear over and over and again, and just become part of their thought process of this is how we do it. So, for you, what are some of those sound bites that they're going to hear at Morrisville?
That's a good question. You're right about the mission statement. We have one, and we have a vision statement, and we have all that. I think what we try to do, and what I try to, how I decide different activities with our team, or what I want to push. You know, we have four core values that we feel like are the foundation of our program, and you could pick. Every program might have four different ones.
Right.
You know, you could pick 100, but
it's what makes it's, you
yeah.
uniquely you as a coach.
Yeah. So I picked trust, faith, accountability, and selflessness. And with trust, we talk about never a doubt is the tagline that we use with that. And what that means is that as a player, it's a waste of time if you have to wonder whether a teammate or a coach is fully bought in, or whether or not you can trust that guy. You know, football is a hard game. It's competitive, and if you're going to maximize your potential as a team, then you can't have players on. A player can't wonder if his teammates is bought in as he is,
right?
So to speak. So trust is number one for a reason. And guys, you know, have no doubts and just go out there and do your thing. When we talk about faith, it's about being having faith in our process. It's about, in football, you know, you can't win the championship and then once you win it, turn around and say, okay, now that we've been to the promised land and I've seen how great this is, now I'm going to buy in to what coach is saying,
right,
or to what our culture is. You don't get it like that in football. You have to buy in before, and then, you know, if you do everything right, maybe. Then you'll win, but you got to buy in on the front end, and then accountability. You know that everyone I think wants their players to be accountable, but how we describe it is that I want our guys to understand and see how their actions affect their teammates.
Yeah.
This day and age, a lot of guys are very focused on themselves and on the man in the mirror, and they are accountable to themselves, but everything that you do affects a teammate. If you miss a lift, or do something very positive, how it affects your teammates, your program, your family, back at home, you know, being accountable to those around you, and that ties into selflessness, trying to get our players to understand that it's not about you, that you are trying to make it about everybody else, But understand that everyone else, you're one of those guys that your teammates making it about you as well. And that's where that connectivity comes into play.
So, yeah, I love talking to coaches about those things and how those then translate to being on the field. Because there's a lot of people who talk about culture mm-hmm. well, and we're going to be about this and we're going to do these things. And then you go out to the field and it's a completely different experience. Your behavior is your culture, right?
Yeah,
so if
sure.
it's those things, you should see them. I mean, to me, I always love going out to spring ball at Ohio State and watching them practice because, you know, you hear, and Ryan Day is carrying over what Urban Meyer did as far as, you know, the culture, but you hear those things and then you go out to practice and you see every single one of those things in
yeah.
play. And what was really neat is I had Anthony Schlegel on the other day who he played at Ohio State, but then he was on Urban's staff. And I mean, he's talking about the exact things that you hear Urban talk about on
yeah.
on the podcast. Like he's living what he learned there. That's what's really neat when you see that translate to, you know, the player's life as well. So, you know, those four things being it, how do we start to see those, or what are some examples you might see out on the field if I was to come out to a Morrisville practice?
Yeah, I think one just how our coaches interact with our players, a lot of positivity, you know, the language that's used, player to player encouragement,
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. You know, I think when there's a positive vibe at practice, and it snowballs into something that's great, and
mm-hmm.
it makes it an environment that guys want to come to practice. We try not that practice is not hard. It's very hard. It has to be hard, ideally harder than the game, right? But there's a way to do that. I think where practice, I want practice to be the best part of our players' day.
Yeah.
It helps to recruit guys that absolutely love football and the grind of being a college football player and all that. Yeah, I think, you know, it's one thing to talk about it, and then we practice it. You know, I think outside of the practice field too, all those core values, different activities that you can do with your team to just build those relationships, community service events, you know, all the things that they might not realize they're working on football, but they are.
Right.
Because the connectivity for an offensive lineman, for an offensive line unit, isn't just built on the practice field. It's built throughout the year as they grow together in your program.
Coach, taking things out onto the field then, and you are the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, so let's give our listeners an overview of what your offense is like.
Sure, yeah. We're a multiple offense, multiple personnel offense. Try to stay balanced as much as we can. Over the course of a season, every game might be a little bit, you know, you might need to run more one game or throw it more another. But, you know, we try to be multiple and have the ability to win playing a few different ways if we need to. So I don't like when, you know, people, I think early in my career, I wanted to be a spread coach.
Yeah.
I wanted to be known as a spread offensive coach. And the more experience I got, I realized that I don't want to be just any one thing. I want to be, I want to be a fundamentally sound offense that blocks well and attacks a defense in multiple ways.
And I like looking at it that way because you can pigeonhole yourself
yes.
in identifying a certain way, and I mean sometimes cause yourself to make decisions that, you know, maybe aren't best for the team, fitting the round peg into the square hole.
Yeah,
those kinds
no
of
doubt.
Things. So, you know, looking at that structure is important to be able to, you know, Andy Kotelnicki and I were talking earlier today, OC at Buffalo, about, you know, an offense being like having a bunch of Lego blocks and being able to put it together in different ways. But the fundamentals remain the same. Mm-hmm. So for you, what's the way you create that structure?
I think it's based on your players. I mean, each year, you know, we're going to have different strengths and weaknesses each year. If you've got multiple tight ends, if we've got multiple tight ends that are some of our best players, then we're going to use them. Or if we've got multiple receivers, you know, three, four receivers, then maybe we'll be more 10 personnel. If your quarterback can run, you can do some more things and format your offense a little bit differently. But it's always going to start with who our best players are. We're going to try to feature those guys. I don't think that's, you know, any earth-shattering philosophy.
Right.
I think any coach is going to want to, you know, focus on getting his best players involved. But whatever we do, we want to keep it simple for the offensive linemen.
Yeah,
those five guys. You know, they don't care what formation we're in. They don't even know. They get a sense for, because they see their buddies subbing in and out, and they know whether we're in a bigger personnel grouping or a smaller one, but they don't really care. I think, you know, to them, they get the scheme and away they go. And I think that's the key, I think, is offensively, all the moving parts on the perimeter, there's a ton of different answers. But if you don't have cohesiveness, you know, the O-line's the heartbeat of your team.
Right.
The more consistent they can be, the better they are. Then you can do a lot of things as a play caller when you've got consistency up front.
Absolutely, you know, those guys. I'd always say, like, they really don't care who has the ball or what they're doing mm-hmm. in the backfield behind them, and that's where you can get creative with just different backfield sets, actions, etc. But having that consistency for them, you know, in we're going to block these schemes over yep. and over and over again mm-hmm. is really what gives them the confidence. And you use the word trust before, right? Just the trust yes. in what they're doing, the trust in each other, because you are repping it again and again, it becomes part of what they do.
Yeah, and the trust. And if you keep it simple for them, over the course of a season, you see so many different looks up front. But for them, they can get so many more reps at it, whether it's inside zone or it's power or it's a pass protection, you know, base pass protection. We try to have very few of those too, just because we know they're going to get a lot thrown at them throughout the course. Blitz looks, base, different fronts, odd front, bare front, I mean, you name it. So keeping it simple for the guys up front is the key for us.
And we talked a little bit about quarterback play, and that's been, you know, what you've been coaching. That's been your thing, still is, as the head coach, coaching quarterbacks. The word simple, though, is something you brought up in, you know, our conversation before we got started, that, you know, for lack of better words, you know, having an operating system that's consistent for them and is simple enough that, you know, whatever concept you might be running, you know, routes you might be running yeah. in the passing game, that for them there's also some simplicity to
it. Yeah, I think you got to have carryover. My philosophy with our quarterbacks is that you got to have carryover with how you structure your passing game. The routes can change. We have tons of route combos in our playbook. Some we use more than others and all that, but the thought process with how you move a quarterback through a progression can be the same. You know, he needs to know where to start,
right.
What's priority number one, and then where to work from there. You know, whether priority number one is, you know, a single receiver on the backside of 3-by-1, and if they're going to give us one-on-one, a gift route or whatever, a post route, a glance, whatever it is, if that single receiver has the look that you want, then that's where we're going to go with the ball and forget about everything else. And if not, if that's a bad look, you know, quarterbacks know what's a good look and what's a bad look. If it's a bad look, then you're going to work the three-man concept side. And then as the routes change, that thought process doesn't change, though. And so I believe if you keep the overall general order of operation, however you want to say, if you can keep that consistent, then you can plug and play. You know, you can run this three-man concept and tweak the route on the backside. But no matter what route you run, that the quarterback is not going to – is going to remain smooth and calm, because he's just going to work his way through it the same way every time.
Right. Could you, as just an example, an illustration for our listeners, I guess talk us through exactly how that works for you. Maybe give us an example of that.
Sure. So let's say you have a 3-by-1, and you're going to run a base concept for us would be any 3-by-1. Our single receiver, if he's detached, and we call him the X, I think,
right.
That's pretty standard. He's going to run a hitch route that converts versus press, versus a tight corner, press or cloud. He's going to convert to the three-man side. Three-man concept, a curl concept we run. The outside receiver will run a 12-yard curl, seeking the window inside. The number two receiver will run what we call a middle route, meaning he's going to attack the middle of the field. If the middle of the field's open, then he can run up the middle. If the middle of the field's closed, then he's going to run across the middle. And then number three to the flat. And so our quarterbacks will prioritize, we're going to put a premium on the single receiver, and we can tag that, that hitch that I talked about.
Right.
We can tag it into a rollover, into a post corner, whatever route we think we need that can attack the best or fits the down and distance the best or the situation. But the quarterback is going to, he's going to prioritize and put a premium on that single receiver side.
Mm-hmm.
And if he likes the look, then he's going to commit to it and throw it. And I you know, he's got to be able to ask himself simple questions. Do I like the X, yes or no? If the answer is yes, then fully commit to it and rip it. We want them to be confident when they make a throw. You know, we don't want their eyes yo-yoing all over the field and, you know, trying to look for a receiver. They need to know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're uncomfortable with that, if it's gray at all, then work backside or work your eyes across the field. It's not like they're staring at that receiver for long. Like they
right.
know what a good look and a bad look
right.
is, and they're going to move their eyes quick.
Mm-hmm.
But having consistency in the thought process so that they can be consistent and they know we're going to either live in this single receiver world, or if I don't love the look, if I don't love the look, then I'm going to work the three-man concept that's called.
And, you know, the way you describe that concept, so if he's starting on, let's say, the ball's on the left hash, your trips are out to the right, he's starting on the left there in his drop. Now his eyes are working across, and you and I talked about the importance of, and you mentioned here, the eyes just not bouncing all over the place.
Right.
So how do you coach him through, and again, provide that consistency with how his eyes work? I think that's the most
yeah.
important part.
Yeah, he's going to scan. So we'll scan our eyes, not to the receiver, but to the area that the receiver is gonna run to. I think if as a quarterback, if you're trying to put your eyes to the actual receiver as he's running, you're gonna be a little bit late on that. So we're working to areas, and that's where trust comes in. Like one of the core values, you got to trust that the receiver is gonna be where he needs to be. But our eyes will scan. And the concept that I called, he's going to look. So if he does not, he's, let's say, the free safety who's on that, the boundary safety.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say they're going to play cloud to the boundary.
Right.
And he's off the hash, outside, off the hash. A quarterback will take his eyes from there and scan to the middle of the field and see what's available. And if he likes the space, then he's going to throw it and rip it and commit to it. And if not, then he's going to scan for the curl window and then to the flat.
Yeah. I like, and, you know, as you said, I got into a lot of those scan reads, how the quarterback's eyes work naturally that way. I mentioned Dan Gonzalez teaching me some mm-hmm. of that and writing about it in his book. That actually, that's how the eyes physically work.
The science
that way.
Behind it
right.
is interesting. Yes,
yeah.
I read that too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Coach, again, I appreciate you taking some time here and taking a break out of all the things going on at the coaching clinic here. But the last question, which if you listen to the podcast, you know, is always the one I finish with. I developed just from one of my favorite books, Bill Walsh's Finding the Winning Edge. So for you, you've mentioned a lot of things here and your offense and what you do with your program. But what is the one thing you feel gives your team the winning edge?
I would say, and I'm probably not the only coach that would give this answer. I think the winning edge comes from, I think, toughness, physical and mental, probably more so mental. And we all know we've been in that game where there's adversity, and you know that your kids, you can see that it could go one of two ways. And if you've trained them the right way, when there's a fork in the road in the game and the going gets tough, I think our guys a lot of time will have some resiliency and some mental toughness. I think the teams like the Kansas City Chiefs,
right?
When it could have gone the wrong way, and they easily could have, you know, could have packed it in, but there was something in them that there was optimism and hope and some toughness about that team. And I hope that my team plays the same way.
Coach, for our listeners out there who want to learn more about your program or connect you with you, what's the best way to do that?
Sure. Twitter's the best way. My handle is _ Coach Fitz, FITZ. You can always, if you have any questions or whatever, can always DM me DM me on Twitter.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck to you and the Mustangs in 2020.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.